Well, hello and welcome. I would say good afternoon, but I think it's only good afternoon here in Ojai, and probably not for most of you. But I'm happy to see you all here. I'm happy to be here with you. So let me begin. I've come to see that in these meetings, especially in these meetings where I am with a mixture of people, some of whom have been with me before and some of whom have not, that I pretty much always start at the beginning. Sometimes I try to make it sound different. I try to be less boring by making it sound a little different, but really I always start at the beginning. I come to speak about self-inquiry. The reason I speak about self-inquiry is because, in my experience, the self-inquiry of Ramana Maharshi finishes the misery of human life, finishes the sense of being alienated from life, finishes the sense of wanting and not getting, the sense of something at stake, the sense of life being deadly serious and miserable. So I come here to speak about self-inquiry, and I have come to the point where I pretty much now am always beginning with the lie, because the lie is the only problem. The underlying message of pretty much all spiritual practice and spiritual tradition in the world is that we are not what we think we are, and that the misunderstanding as to what we are lies at the heart of all the sense that there is a problem here, there's a problem in my life. So I begin with a lie. It's important that we see that it's important that we see that what's claimed, what must be true in order for self-inquiry to be what it is supposed to be, in order for that to be true, then it must be true that the problem, the lie, has to go. And the lie is the belief that I am my life. It really is that simple. There is within us all a deep-seated and unseen, unconscious, unseeable, driving belief that I am my life. That what happens in my life happens to me. That what becomes of my life becomes of me. That the pleasure and the pain in my life are my pleasure and pain. And that, most fundamentally, I am at stake in this life. That I have to get this life right. I have to have the right thoughts and not the wrong thoughts, the right desires and not the wrong desires. I have to be good and not bad. I have to be smart. I have to be clear. I have to understand all. I am at stake here. Whatever happens in this life happens to me. That's the belief that I am my life. And if it's true that I am my life, then it certainly is true that there's nothing whatsoever can be done about easing my pain. Nothing whatever can be done about the underlying ever-present sense of something missing if I am my life. But the claim of all the spiritual traditions, and most particularly and simply and directly the teaching of Ramana Maharshi, is that I am not my life. and that if I can rid myself of the belief that I am my life, the inherent underlying peace and love will prevail. So Ramana tells us that the solution to the lie, the solution to the belief that I am my life, is the truth of what I am. That's what solves the lie. The truth solves the lie. And it is this that underlies the whole offering of Ramana Maharshi of self-inquiry. Ramana Maharshi tells us that what self-inquiry accomplishes is to rid ourselves of the lie that we are our life, and that it is infallible in doing so. It is the only thing that can do that, is to find out the truth of what I am. And Ramana offers us what seem to be two ways of approaching this self-inquiry. One way is to inquire, that is to investigate, to use my conscious attention to look at, taste, feel, face. First of all, the nature of what this is that I believe myself to be. What is at the center, at the core of this person, this individual who is the life that is playing out in this mind? What is the heart of me, really? What is this me, really? And Ramana advises us that in all cases, whenever anything is happening, whenever any thought is appearing or disappearing, whenever any experience is appearing or disappearing, always there is this person, this me, and that it's always possible for me to turn the light of my attention onto this experience of being a person, an individual, subject to the vicissitudes of life, subject to the changes and pleasures and pains of life. That we can turn and put the light of our attention on the experience of being this me and see what it is, and always upon success in finding this experience of being me with the light of my attention, always I discover that there is no such thing to be found. It is fictional. It is a thought only. And when I shine the light of my attention on it, that thought, that experience of being me, reveals itself to be nothing at all. It disappears. It vanishes. That's the one way in which self-inquiry is taught by Ramana Maharshi. It is the inquiry of discovering the actual nature of this that I believe myself to be, and seeing it to be nothing, to be freed of the idea that it is me. The other seemingly different approach to self-inquiry, also which comes from Ramana Maharshi, is instead of revealing the underlying falseness of the individual I believe myself to be, to reveal the actual truth of what I am, to turn the light of my attention not onto the false, but onto the real, to look with all of my heart, with every breath, with every thought, to find some way to turn and find with my light, the light of my attention, the light of my consciousness, the actual reality of what I am. Because if I look at the reality of what I am often enough, inevitably and surely, without any question whatsoever, the idea that I am something else is gone. It can't survive. So, in this mode of self-inquiry, I turn my consciousness and my attention and the light of my awareness as much as I can, looking for what I am, looking, thinking about it, really thinking about it, trying to figure out how in the world can I get this experience of the reality of what I am. Seeing that reality, the one thing that characterizes reality is that it is permanent. It doesn't come and go. It's reliable. So that tells me that what I'm looking for when I'm looking for reality is permanence. Something here that has never changed, that is always the same, that is unaffected by pain or pleasure, that is exactly the same now as it was when I was 3 or 5 or 15. Untouched, unaffected by any of the comings and goings of human life. The same, at peace, silent, clear. Turns out, of course, that both of those modes of self-inquiry end up, reveal themselves in the end to be exactly the same. If I look at a phenomenon, a thought, that I believe is me, that I believe is at the very center of this person that I know that I am, if I look at that thought and it vanishes, what remains is what doesn't vanish, which is this same permanent reality that I find when I look with all my heart to find the actual reality of what I am directly. And if I so that in looking for the false, I find the true, because the false disappears. In looking for the false, I find the true. In looking for the true, I find the true. And it is this that produces the outcome of self-inquiry, it's not anything other than having had in consciousness the direct conscious experience of the reality of what I am. And that erases the false over time. And it matters not how I get there, by what means I come to see consciously reality itself. It matters not whether I am looking for reality or I am looking for the false. If I get to what's here, the reality of what's here, that does the work. Just that seeing of reality over time, again and again, erodes away, evaporates, destroys, disintegrates the false belief that I am my life, my thoughts, my mind, my actions, my experiences. That tasting of reality wipes away that belief. And it's wiping away the eradication of that belief that along with it eradicates this deep sense that I am at stake in this life and that I am at risk, at danger of failing in this life. And then, in the absence of the belief that I am the life and that I am mistaken, quite surprisingly, the outcome of that, the consequence, the unfolding of that, is to discover myself relaxing back fully into the life itself, more intimately than I could ever imagine, falling into the life, dissolving into the life. Because the problem is not the life. The problem is not the sense of separation. The problem is not the ups and downs and vicissitudes and comings and going of the life. The problem is the belief that I am the life. The life itself is precious beyond comprehension. It is a gift that is to me, to myself. A gift to myself that is greater than anything that can be imagined. And humanity, that life of humanity, is magnificent beyond description. And seem to be so, once I give up the idea that it's me. So that's the purpose of self-inquiry. Every time that I come to speak with people about this, I am really astonished that I can talk for so long and at the end of it all know that I haven't in any way come close to saying what it is that I'm trying to say to you, because when I'm not talking about it, it seems to me to be so easy, so easy, it's so obvious. It is so easy. I don't know how else to say it. I know that there was a time when I was enjoying the spiritual melodrama, when I knew how hard it was, when I strained and tried with all my mind to take in, to receive, to be uplifted or transformed or overturned by whatever it was that spiritual discussion was about. And I know it didn't seem easy. It seemed incomprehensibly difficult. I could not make sense of what anybody was saying about this. And now, it's so easy. It's so obvious. What you seek is what you are. It's that simple. What you seek has nothing whatsoever to do with doing anything at all about your life. Nor does it have anything to do with being finished with doing anything at all about your life. All of that's beside the point. None of that has anything to do with you. In the end, I've come to see that realization, the realization that is the outcome of self-inquiry, is termites. Like termites in the structure of your house, the inquiry, the constant, even for a second, tasting the reality of what you are, even if you don't know that that's what you're doing. The little bits and pieces of touching reality are like termites in the structure of your house. They are busily eating away everything, the whole structure, the whole foundation for the belief that you are a suffering individual. They are eating it away. And you don't know what's going on. Seems like everything is still the same. Seems like you will forever be caught in this spiritual melodrama or material melodrama or wanting and not getting. Until one day you look around and say, boy, it's been a long time. It's been a long time since I have felt anything other than ease of being. And that's because the termites have done their work, unbeknownst to you, with no regard for you whatsoever. Self-inquiry, truth, is all that can defeat the lie. Truth. And you are the truth. You can't get away from the truth. It's easy, so easy. Okay, I'm going to stop talking for now. I will be happy to speak to any of you to take your questions or your confusion or your disagreement or whatever else you have to offer me and speak with you. So let us know if you want to speak.
We have Arnell in San Diego. Arnell, you can speak. Can you speak now?
Arnell, I can't hear you. I'm not sure why. I see your green light coming on, but I can't hear a word. Still not. You could send me a text message, and I could respond to that.
We have Steve in San Diego. You can speak now, Steve. Steve Cole.
Hi, Steve. Well, it seems that we are having technical difficulties, as they say. Arnell sent me a message. Hello, Arnell. Do you have something you'd like me to speak about?
We have Steve is going to try again. Steve?
Hi, John.
Hi, John. Steve. Steve, hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Are you on push to talk or voice activation?
Push to talk.
Okay, good. What can I do for you? It's good to see you, hear from you.
Well, basically, what's going on for me, can you hear me now?
I can. You should just leave your push to talk button down until we're done.
Oh, okay. I just had to turn on the mute. Okay. I've been inquiring since even before I knew you, and the thing that's, I guess, is sort of exasperating for me is I don't have any sense of anything different the whole time. No awareness is different, nothing like that. And I just, not even sure where to go with that. I have a lot of intellectual awarenesses, but no visceral sense of anything different than it's ever been. So I'd like you to address that.
What do you mean, anything different than it's ever been? You're never going to be different than you've ever been. The life is different, right? It changes.
Yes, I know that. I guess what it is I, for lack of a better word, using the phrase you would say is, I don't know the truth of what I am.
Well, see, and what I say is that you do know the truth of what you are. But you don't know you know because you haven't had the experience of knowing and have it knowingly.
Right, and so that's my exasperation is I want to have that experience of knowing knowingly.
Yeah, well, you're here, right?
I am.
You know that, right?
Yes.
What does it feel like to know that?
Sort of empty.
Uh-huh. The knowing that you're here is the knowing of reality. That is precisely what you are, is that knowing that you're here. There's nothing more to you than that.
Okay.
And, but the thing is that When we spend time in the spiritual arena, we cannot avoid, actually even before the spiritual arena, forget the spiritual arena. It is our nature, it is the nature of humanity, of human beings, to want something to be different. To want to, like if I think there's something that I can get that'll solve my problems, then the solution of my problems is going to be a big, hit, you know, like it'll feel good. It'll be something new and special. And of course, when we're involved in spiritual practice, it's natural that we would expect something new and special to be the outcome of our spiritual practice if we're successful, because that seems to be what everybody's saying is the case. But the fact of the matter is that if it's new and special, it can't be what we're looking for, because everything that's new and special becomes old and dead in time, and we know that. So what we're really looking for, it must be that what we're looking for is that which has never changed, and that's you. That's the only thing that's constant here, is you. And that is this silent knowing that you are. Just that. It's not the energy, the energetic experience of I am or anything like that. That energetic experience is sometimes here and sometimes not. It sometimes is here confirming of my existence and sometimes just isn't. But what is always here is the certainty that I am. That absolute, uncompromising, unassailable certainty that I am here. So the point of self-inquiry is not to get something new or even to make what is already universally present. The purpose of self-inquiry is to erase the belief that I am this life. And the way in which it erases the belief is by the consistent, conscious experiencing, tasting, facing, looking at this knowing that I am, which is what you just did a moment ago. That's self-inquiry. And if you do that, if you taste that which you described to me as kind of empty, knowing that I am here, that I exist. If you taste that often enough, the belief that you are the life will vanish, and this what you might call empty, peaceful, absolutely open vastness of reality, silent reality, that you already always know, you will always know, you know. Do you follow me?
Yeah, I do, John. Yeah, I just clarified. It's, if I think you've always said it's really impossible to speak the truth, but if I listen enough, I pick up glimpses of what you're talking about and what I'm getting.
Yeah, that's useful, yeah.
And so what I'm getting this time is the part that there's this recognition of I am here, and to keep my attention there whenever I can. And then just eventually the sense of I am this life will disappear.
That's right. And the outcome of that is that which you have been paying such close attention to, you will no longer be paying such close attention to. And this subtle, silent reality that in which all of this happens, you'll know that it's here always. You relax.
Okay.
And you can relax into your life.
Mm-hmm.
Is that helpful?
Yeah. I'm just pissed off that it hasn't happened sooner.
Yeah, well, you got to keep at it. You know, and the thing is, like I've spoken, I don't know if you've been with me when I spoke about this, it's really a really good thing way to think about self-inquiry is as medicine, not as any kind of spiritual endeavor. Just as medicine. You hear that?
Yeah, I listened to that recording, and okay. Makes sense to me.
Okay.
Just trust the doctor and do it. Okay.
That's it. I'm very happy to hear
Dr.
from you,
John.
Steve.
Yeah, good to talk with you.
Okay.
Take care.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.
We don't know what we're expecting, you know. We do have an idea of what we're expecting, and it may vary from person to person, but it always has something to do with everything being cleared up, with the life being transformed or transcended or fixed in some way. But that can only be useful to us if we are the life. And first we have to find out what we are. And first.
We have Peter from Poland on the line. Peter, you can speak now.
Peter? Peter? I hear my voice. Peter, are you having
Peter,
trouble?
Are you having trouble?
I think I'm... I'm being picked up by your microphone. Okay, well, you can see what you can do, Peter. I don't know whether you're on Windows or Mac, but see what you can do.
We now have Derek calling from Ireland. Derek?
Hello.
Hi, Derek.
Hi, John.
Good to speak with you, but you have your speakers picking me up also.
Sorry, I think I fixed it now. Is it okay?
Yeah, that's better.
Good.
So, what can I do for you? I read your email the other day. I was quite tickled at the idea of having Ramana's teaching translated into Irish, of all things.
No, I was joking. Nobody speaks Irish, so I think it'd be a waste of time, to be honest. There's only 5,000 people or something speak it, and I don't think I can remember it from school anyway, so it's not going to happen. I guess I just have a report for you, John. I tried writing emails a few times, but it just never seems to happen. I still don't have anything to say to you, to be honest. I came across your teaching, I think, about maybe 9 months ago on some video, maybe on YouTube or something, and started to listen to your podcast, and something you said about, you know you're here always, and you know you've never changed, I just started to laugh, and it just made complete sense to me, and I guess for a long time I've had this absolute drive in me just to know what I am, or to be free of this, whatever it is, something what you said, I just completely connected with it, and I've done it. I mean, that's pretty much all I've been doing. I mean, I went to Asia. I'm just back actually a few days, but I went there to meditate and stuff. And I spent a lot of time in different monasteries, and I just did what you told me to do. I didn't even follow Vipassana practices. I gave it all up, and I just did that. And I can't really say anything other than, most of the old kind of stuff is just gone, and I still couldn't tell you what I am or anything, but it just feels better. I'm sorry, I can't put it in better words for you.
I think you're actually doing very well. You know, the thing is that, and this is often a stumbling block for people in self-inquiry, is that when I speak about the fact that we need to see what we are, it's natural for us with our lifetimes of habits in these matters, it's natural for us to think that what I'm saying is that we need to be able to say what we are. And that's simply not possible, to say what we are. In fact, so far in my experience, the whole life is an attempt to say what we are. In fact, it's my experience that, like you speak of being caught, held by a great burning desire to know the truth of what you are for some time. It's my experience that that's all we ever do in life. And it may be for me, and maybe for a lot of other people, I didn't know that's what I was doing. I thought I was trying to be good. I thought I was trying to do the right thing. I thought I was trying to figure out what I should be and what I should do and what I should become and what I should get rid of and what I should not think and so forth. But all of that was driven by this underlying force of the life, which is the deep need to see myself directly, played out in indirect and in indirect actions that cannot satisfy that desire to see myself directly. And once it's pointed out, once the where the gold is to be found is pointed out and heard, then it is to be expected that I would discover that this is what I've always been wanting. This is what I've always been wanting to do. This is what I've always been trying to do. This is what I've always failed to do. And the truth is that it's just that everything is easier once you're rid of that lie. Everything in life is easier. Everything. So I'm happy to hear from you. I'm happy to hear that your report. And I think it was beautiful.
Okay. Thanks. Just one other point. Just listening back, I actually checked it a few days ago because I knew I'd heard you say it before. It was about if you believe yourself to be anything at all, you'll suffer. And it was like for so long doing this practice, I was... like I would spend hours and hours and hours, John, just doing this, and I still do, but it seems easier, just more natural or something. But looking into space, looking for something, you know, as in expecting something to happen, as like trying to find something, when I only realized recently that, like, it's hard to put into words, but just that's it. That space, or that.
I can't say any. That's right. That's right. It's you. It's all you. Yeah. And you know that the beauty, the thing that makes self-inquiry infallible. And I am not exaggerating. You guys all find out on your own if I'm telling a lie. The only way you can find out if I'm telling a lie is to do this, which doesn't cost you anything and doesn't cause you any trouble. So do this and find out if I'm telling a lie. But I know that I've fought mightily, even after I had finally heard Ramana pretty clearly, I fought mightily to understand, to see something, to get something. But the beauty of self-inquiry and the thing that makes it infallible is that that doesn't matter. If what you're trying to do is see yourself, everything works out in the end. That's all that's needed, is that you try with all your heart to see what you are. And you can't do it wrong. And you can't do it right either. But you can't do it wrong. And every taste of yourself, whether you are, and you will surely, certainly not understand what it is you're seeing. You will certainly be wrong about whatever you assign to it as a characteristic or what it is you are. But that doesn't matter, because every time you look at yourself directly, it's the medicine, and it starts eating away the lie. And the lie gets eaten away even when we are totally unaware of what it is we are doing, as long as we are looking at ourselves, just trying to see ourselves, just wanting to know what's true here. So, and the amazing thing is that when people do this, and like you from, you know, Ireland and in, I don't know where you were, in Asia, when they do this, when they really do it, they all report back in the same way, which is the same as my own experience with this. So, anyway, I'm happy to hear from you, Derek.
Thank you so much, John. I really, really appreciate everything you're doing and the podcast and everything. Honest to God, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it.
Very, very. You're very welcome. Really welcome. It's my pleasure. Okay?
Thank you. Cheers.
Yes.
We have Phil calling from Arizona. Phil?
Hello, John.
Hello,
John,
Phil. How are you?
Oh,
I
well,
can.
Doing
can
all right. Good, good. I can hear you well.
Okay, good.
I feel that I have a strong intellectual understanding of self-inquiry and my true nature, but my difficulty is in my attempts to hold the focus on the sense of being here. And I know this has come up, you know, a number of times in satsang about physical pain and chronic pain and things like that. Mm-hmm. For me, there are some issues that can't be alleviated, you know, with medicines. So it's something that's a constant companion for me. And I think it was in the last satsang, it was mentioned that pain has a way of pointing back to the self. But mm-hmm. I didn't quite get that. My experience is that pain draws attention to itself and kind of away from the sense of being here. Or perhaps it's the desire to escape that discomfort that results in my drifting off into not being present and away from, you know, that sense of self.
Well,
so
Go on.
Well, I'm just trying to, you know, look for, you know, an understanding of this. I mean, Ramana, I'm sure in his last days was in a great deal of pain. Yet, you know, it was said that he was deeply immersed in self-realization and, you know, maybe, you know, wasn't affected by it because of that. So I continually kind of struggle with this issue.
Okay, yeah, Ramana was in great pain during his during the time of his illness that led up to his death. First of all, I'd advise everybody to take with a grain of salt all the descriptions of the states of others being immersed in bliss and so forth. There's no basis for that. The truth is that we are all immersed in bliss always. And it was that Ramana said again and again and again. And even immersed in bliss or immersed in realization, as we all always are, pain still is pain. And as the Buddha said, is inherently unpleasant. But the
John, I've completely lost you. I can't hear you at all.
John is trying to...
Can you hear me now?
Okay, yes, now I can hear you.
I'm very sorry. I leaned on the mute button on my microphone, which hangs down here. For how long? When was the last time you heard me?
You were just starting to talk about the different states that are attributed to Ramana.
Well, that was quite a while ago.
Yes, it was.
Let me just, I remember kind of what I was saying about that, and I'll say it again now. We should take with it, and I guess if you didn't hear me, nobody else did either. So we should take with a grain of salt reports from observers about the states of people like Ramana in order efforts to explain them by saying that they are immersed in realization or immersed in bliss or any of that. The fact is that we are all immersed in realization and immersed in bliss from the very beginning. There's never a time when we are not that, and pain remains inherently unpleasant. Ramana never claimed to be indifferent to pain in the body. Ramana would, like once when he was bitten by bees or something, hornets or some wicked insects, he explained that it was karma and that people should just leave them alone because obviously the leg that they were chewing on had it coming. But he never claimed to be distanced or dissociated from pain or from his life for that matter. All of the reports about being immersed in self-realization come from onlookers. It was Ramana's consistent claim that all are always immersed in realization. The second thing is that you started by telling me about the difficulty of holding focus on the experience of being, the experience of being here, present, and so forth. And the truth is that it's impossible to hold your focus on that. It's the point of, and it doesn't matter, the point of self-inquiry is not to get you to where you are constantly focusing your attention on the reality of what you are, but to get you to the point where you recognize what the reality of what you are feels like so you can notice that you are always aware of it, just so you know what it is that you are always aware of. And you can say, oh, that, just that. As far as the role of pain, the thing about pain is this. If there's anything that can be done about pain, it is really, there's no sense whatsoever enduring pain if pain can be dealt with. But some pain cannot. Some bodily pain is chronic and nothing can be done about it. And it does very much call attention to itself. There's no doubt about that. It is a strong magnet for attention. Attention wants to keep an eye on it and make sure that it's just to keep an eye on it. But and without denying that, the strength of the experience of pain is the same as the strength of the experience of the subject of the pain. So that the fact that the experience of pain is strong implies that the experience of the subject is also strong, so that you have the opportunity, you know, it's not going to happen that you are constantly going to have your attention focused on reality. But the fact that pain is so strong and creates such a powerful experience of being afflicted by it creates also the opportunity of just for a second, turning your attention away from the pain to the feeler of the pain and find out who that is. And that will be discovered to be, well, you. And when you try to find out what that is, you will find that the one who is subject to the pain is inexistent. And what remains is reality. And then, of course, the energy, the power of attention will immediately reconstitute itself to hold the pain in its eye. And that's okay. The time that's spent not looking at reality is, in as far as self-inquiry is concerned, that time is beside the point. It has no consequence. It doesn't stop you from seeing truth. The only time that has any consequence is the time, whether it be seconds or minutes or hours or days or whatever, that you spend actually looking at reality. That's the only time that counts. The rest of it doesn't affect you at all. The fact that you are caught by pain and can't get your mind off of it, that doesn't touch you at all, really. Just stay with the inquiry. Look, whenever you get the chance, whenever any circumstances arise that encourage you to look for this silent reality of what you are, in order that you can recognize that you always see it. And everything will come out right. But the pain won't go away because of it. Pain may go away for other reasons, but not because of self-inquiry. The pain that self-inquiry eliminates is the pain of the belief that I am this life, and that everything that happens in it happens to me.
That's very helpful. And it reinforces something that I've been noticing as well, in, you know, I'll come to the point where I realize that I, you know, wasn't, where I was away somewhere in my mind, and I bring my attention back on the sense of being here, and I realize at that moment that I was not absent during those times when I thought I was absent as well.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Yeah.
That's
so,
right.
And that's becoming
exactly
more and
right.
more clear to me.
Yes, this is, so, the fact that this is becoming clearer to you is because of self-inquiry. You see, the clarity kind of sneaks up on you. It's not like a thunderbolt. It's not like a lightning strike. The clarity sneaks up on you because the clarity is always here. All that happens is that you more and more see what's always here. Okay?
Right. That makes perfect sense. And thank you so much. It's just such a wonderful opportunity to be able to speak with you directly about this.
Oh,
so thank
I'm very
you.
Happy to. You're very welcome. Thank you, Phil.
We have Peter from Poland on the line. Peter?
Hello?
Ah, there you are.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I got something wrong with my mic. But now it's okay, right? Do you hear me?
Oh, it's perfect. Perfect.
Okay. Okay, so I just wanted to say, really, that we spoke 2 weeks ago, and you pointed to me that whatever I am asking myself, who am I, or wherever I'm concentrating on the I am, basically there's a division in me, and I cannot be this I am.
What? Could you repeat that, please?
Yeah, I'm sorry, my English is kind of bad.
It's okay, it's okay.
Because I, for a long time I thought that this this I am is somewhat different, that it is real. Somehow that when I concentrate on... I'm picking myself in your speakers or something, I don't know. I don't know why it's happened.
But it doesn't matter. Unless it bothers you a lot, it doesn't matter to us.
No, I can speak right. I think I forgot what I wanted to say, really.
Well, you were talking about the fact that we spoke before, and when we spoke before, you expressed the idea that the experience of I am was reality and permanent, and I suggested to you that that might not be the case. Is that right?
Yes. It'll be. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what was the outcome of that?
Because I thought that that I was concentrating on this I am, and I thought that this I am is real, that is something.
Right, right.
And you said that wherever I'm concentrating on it, so it cannot be me when I'm.
Yes, right, right. I remember.
Yeah. And I think that it have been something for me because I really thought that this is me and I've kind of identified with it. And
what is your experience now?
I don't know. I think I lost it somehow. This I am that I am this I am.
Is that a bad thing?
Yeah. Could you repeat that?
Is that a bad thing?
No. It actually it feels better now because.
Well, I am tickled pink about that, Peter. I don't know if that's an old expression, but I am very happy to hear that. And you continue the inquiry, right?
Yeah, but for the most of the time, I feel when I do the inquiry, I feel like the person is disappearing rather than I'm seeing something. Like the fear mode is rather real for me than, and there is this like something like space left, but.
That's you. Not space, something like space. Awareness, really. It is the subtlety and the inexpressibility of reality has given work to an awful lot of sutra writers and sermonizers and stuff like that, trying to say something true about what's true. And it's that that produces the idea that it's emptiness, and that produces all kinds of ideas. But it's you. And it's really absolutely unnecessary to have any intellectual understanding of it. Thank God, because any intellectual understanding of you is impossible. But it's like space. Silent.
The meeting was interrupted at this point because the connection was so bad that we could not continue.